under this administration, the Attorney General has provided an opinion that yes, tribes do exist, that we have inherent sovereignty.
Another legal decision clarifying the relationship between the state and tribes announced at the second day of AFN today. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a BuzzFeed news story reveals safety concerns for BP workers on the North Slope.
There's a lot of information in this report that says things were going badly for BP and we didn't know anything about it. The public didn't know anything about it.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaskans and in the 40 years of Alaska operations. And by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. Speak to your financial advisor or contact us to learn more. Thank you.
State attorneys are appealing a judge's decision to allow a controversial ballot initiative to move forward. The Department of Law filed a notice of appeal today asking the Supreme Court to reverse the lower court's opinion. In a media release, State Attorney General Jana Lindemuth says the question of whether the ballot initiative is unconstitutional should be answered by the Supreme Court. The initiative would ask voters in 2018 to strengthen the state's permitting requirements for projects that could interfere with salmon streams. Developers would have to prove that the projects wouldn't damage salmon habitat. Last month, Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott rejected the initiative, saying it's too broad and could halt development of roads, pipelines, and the proposed Pebble Mine. On the second day of this year's annual AFN gathering in Anchorage, another significant announcement regarding the relationship between the state and tribes was put forward. Delegates were told of a major new ruling by the State Attorney General's office, which seeks to resolve decades of legal battles by concluding that Alaska's 229 tribes are fully sovereign entities. The move is a win for tribal and indigenous advocates who have long contended they have equal jurisdiction and standing with the state of Alaska. The news came just one day after the governor signed an unprecedented compact with tribal entities that gives them potential control over child welfare policies. Richard Peterson chairs the governor's Tribal Advisory Council and is president of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes.
I don't know if the gravity really is hitting everybody, but we've been arguing for recognition since statehood. And under this administration, the Attorney General has provided an opinion that yes, tribes do exist, that we have inherent sovereignty.
Peterson says there's little in the 16-page ruling that will dramatically change current policy, but he offers the Village Public Safety Officers Program as one example of where tribes have had lesser standing than the state in bringing safety measures to tribal communities in rural Alaska. Going forward, he says, tribes will be in a better position to develop and implement policy.
I don't even know that it's leverage when you know, equity isn't exactly leverage. It's putting us all on the same playing field. And so I just look forward to being able to work together with a sense of equality and being able to accomplish things for all Alaskans.
The ruling, authored by Attorney General Jana Lindemuth, dispels ambiguities and misinterpretations of whether the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act nullified tribal sovereignty in Alaska. The ruling clarifies that ANCSA did not. Delegates heard from the Legislative House Bush Caucus. Representative Neil Foster of Nome laid out work the group has done for Alaska Natives, including protecting the VPSO budget from cuts, keeping the minimum student enrollment number for rural schools at 10, and trying to secure more drug treatment options. Foster says going into the lawmakers' fourth special session next week, caucus members are opposed to fiscal measures that will have a disproportionate impact on residents living off the road system.
Part of that means that we must not balance the budget on the backs of rural Alaska.
The convention saw a panel on climate change immediately after a presentation from a Newtok resident about a resolution going before delegates. If passed, it would support putting disaster relief resources toward dozens of communities facing erosion and near-term effects from climate change. And AFN's most prestigious awards were announced. They included the Delegates Healing Hands Award for providing health care in Native communities. This year, it was given to Ethel Lund, one of the founders of the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH. Lund flew up this morning from her home in Juneau, and in spite of difficulties speaking because of Parkinson's, she says that at her August age, she sees Indigenous causes improving.
I remember the first time I was called an elder, and I wasn't ready for it yet. I was only 72.
AFN wraps up on Saturday, when delegates will hear from all three members of Alaska's congressional delegation and vote on this year's draft resolutions. An investigation published today by BuzzFeed News revealed BP Alaska was responsible for a series of safety incidents on the North Slope this year, some of which put workers at risk. BP isn't disputing that the incidents took place. The company has already taken extreme steps to address the issue. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk has more details.
As part of its report, BuzzFeed obtained a recording of Jeff Kilfoyle, health and safety manager for BP Exploration Alaska, talking to workers this September.
Obviously, any gas release is not a good thing, but a gas release of that magnitude inside a structure with people is obviously a major concern to us within Alaska and within the business, right? That's not a place we want to be.
Kilfoyle was talking about a previously unreported safety incident that happened on September 10th. According to BuzzFeed, two workers were exposed to a gas leak inside a building at one of BP's drill sites. The workers weren't injured, but the situation could have led to a deadly explosion. This was one of five spills or leaks, called Tier 1 events, that BuzzFeed reports BP Alaska was responsible for this year. BuzzFeed obtained emails showing BP's leaders were so alarmed by the incidents, they forced many of their employees to halt work for the first 12 days of October. BP operates Prudhoe Bay, the biggest oil field in Alaska. In an email to company workers, BP Alaska President Janet Weiss said, quote, "I am deeply concerned that with these trends, we are not in a stable state," unquote. Kathy Forrester, who sits on the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, says the incidents described in the report are troubling, but she also thinks BP is taking the right steps to address the situation.
Well, of course it's concerning, and you can tell Janet's concerned. When you see a trend of either unsafe or unenvironmentally sensitive events, then you definitely need to step back and take a time out. Take a look at what you're doing and assess what you need to change. And that's what BP did.
Forrester says because her agency only has jurisdiction over two of the incidents, she couldn't comment on whether the age of BP's facilities was a factor. Richard Sears, a professor of energy resources engineering at Stanford, says the fact that Prudhoe Bay has been online for 40 years could be leading to issues, but that's likely not the full story. Sears, who advised the presidential commission that investigated the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, thinks BP is right to be worried. But he also says not all five of the leaks outlined in BuzzFeed's report are equally serious.
The bottom line, is BP some kind of a scoundrel because of all of this? Not really. Have they possibly let maintenance and good safety practice lapse a little bit in the last few years? That's very possible. Does it mean that something really bad is about to happen on the North Slope? I don't think so. I always think that when a company recognizes they've got a problem, that's the first step, right?
However, Lois Epstein of the Wilderness Society says she's disturbed that the public didn't know about these incidents before BuzzFeed reported on them.
There's a lot of information in this report that says things were going badly for BP, and we didn't know anything about it. The public didn't know anything about it.
In response to the report, BP provided Alaska's Energy Desk with the same written statement it sent to BuzzFeed. BP says safety and protecting the environment are the company's top priorities and that it reported all the incidents to the appropriate state and federal officials. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage Trail volunteers work to rebuild damaged landscapes on Flattop Mountain.
About every single person here that's been using the trail has thanked us for our hard work, and It's just amazing to be able to see the fruits of your labor and have people thanking you for the work you've put in.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ExxonMobil Alaska, whose goal is safe and responsible operations of the Point Thompson facility. ExxonMobil, energy lives here.
Would you like to play an integral part to what you're listening to? Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, we thank you. If you'd like to become a member or sponsor, it's really easy. Start with a call to this station or visit us at our website.
The goings-on in the main convention hall at AFN deal with pretty serious issues, but showcasing Alaska Native culture through traditional arts and crafts is a huge and more colorful part of the annual gathering. Alaska Public Media reporter Casey Grove has this audio postcard with voices of just a few of the dozens of artists featuring their work at AFN this year.
I'm Letha Jamiro-Ress. I'm originally from Bethel, but I live in Fairbanks. I'm here with my gusbooks. I sell sheer gusbooks and regular cloth gusbooks and some jackets. It is a tedious process, and I do make sheer ones, and that's like a really light, delicate material. The final stage of the tanning process is smoking the hides. So that's the smoke smell that you could really smell.
I'm Earl Atchek. I'm a mask maker. Well, it's not how long the actual carving takes that is the beginning of a mask. It's usually a person with an experience like going out seal hunting over the course of a year or two, and we finally get an experience with a seal that experience, we cannot leave it. It stays with us for a while. When I saw a bearded seal that was mating, that call that goes and that experience that kind of experience changes you. That experience is what helps me sell my work, because I'm able to tell the story. Otherwise, it's just a product. A piece of wood means nothing unless if you had that experience.
My name is Bernadette Charlie. Well, I'm doing the braid for a bolo tie. And I braided this myself. I made a 4-strand braid out of calfskin. And then I covered the ends with moose hide. And now I'm beading over that moose hide. And I'm using a peyote stitch. The end piece is caribou. And I'm making it for somebody that's caribou clan. And I made it so that he's just coming out of the brush. And you see that the gray, that's the fog in the morning.
My name is Dora M. Boucher. That's my English name. And my Yupik name is Umara Napawatak. I'm originally from St. Lawrence Island. So I do traditional tattoos. And then some of them I get it from artifacts. We believe in reincarnation. Those are northern lights. That's what my grandmother told me. And so, you know, the souls that went up to heavens, we don't have hell. Which is, I'm so happy about, because church sometimes scares me. And they dance till they capture the young soul that's coming to earth to be born.
Did you say that you got some of these designs from artifacts?
Artifacts, you know, I have a lot of artifact books. And then where I'm from, you know, they have really old artifacts on St. Lawrence Island.
The voices of artists in the exhibit hall at this year's Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage. That audio postcard was produced by Casey Grove and Dave Waldron. Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Carl Castle says the buildup associated with two squadrons of F-35 warplanes coming to Eielson Air Force Base in a couple of years will be a welcome economic boost. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
In better times, Castle might be crowing about an expansion of the Fairbanks area's economy that would be driven by $500 million in construction and 5,000 new people who are expected to be drawn here by the F-35s. Instead, the mayor says he's just glad the economic benefits will basically just enable the area to hold its own.
So it's huge for all of us in the borough, and it's helping save our bacon, so to speak, with the changing economy and what's going on in the state.
What's going on statewide is a continuing continuation of the economic slowdown that's been underway for more than 3 years now, caused by plummeting oil prices and a corresponding freefall of state revenues that come from the industry. According to the State Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Alaska's unemployment rate in August stood at 6.3%. In the borough, it was 5.5%. Statewide job growth, wage growth, GDP growth, and home prices were all down by more than 2 percentage points in August from the 10-year average. So Castle says the near-term prospect of slow or no growth in the borough's economy doesn't sound too bad.
We're going to see our economy stay comparatively flat while the rest of the state is going to be taking a pretty good hit.
Castle took a few minutes away from schmoozing during Tuesday's F-35 celebration of sorts at Eielson to explain studies that suggest more than 5,000 people coming to the area with the warplanes also will likely offset a decrease in the Fairbanks area population that's largely due to cuts in funding for state agencies and the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
We have been also quantifying the exodus from Fairbanks as a result of cuts at the university, state cuts. There's been a number of those that are resulting in people leaving Fairbanks now.
Castle says most of the new residents probably will find homes on the city's east side, closer to Eielson, while much of the population losses likely will occur on the west side around the university. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Concern over poor king salmon runs across the state drew a panel of fisheries experts to a meeting this week in Anchorage. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche has more.
Panelists addressed the elements that play into ocean survivability like fishing, predation, and warming waters. National conservation nonprofit Trout Unlimited hosted the panel. Austin Williams, the group's legal and policy director in Alaska, says there are still a lot of gaps in knowledge. He says there is a real need for continued research to address some of the reasons king runs are weaker.
It's an issue not just confined to Cook Inlet or the Anchorage area. We have the Southeast Alaska Chinook runs have decreased dramatically and were entirely shut down this year. And then we've also, you know, some of the runs in Western Alaska have also been declining at alarming rates.
Williams says overall, the state has successfully managed its fisheries.
We need to continue to do that, and we need to continue to recognize that in the lean years when we don't have as many fish returning as we'd like, you know, we need to curtail back fishing. And when we have years of abundance, we need to make sure that we go fishing and enjoy that.
He says there's an overlay of politics and policy when managing the fisheries, but the panel looked at the things people have more control over, like sustainability. Panel moderator Dave Atchison, a sport fisher and journalist, called the event a start.
We were hoping that this will spawn a lot more action and maybe, you know, to have a whole full day symposium in the future.
Other speakers touched on the importance of freshwater habitat in conserving fish stocks and public involvement in protecting natural resources. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
And by
Raven Alaska, committed to customer safety and satisfaction, reminding Alaska that now is a great time to fly. Learn more at flyravn.com.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Breaking Trail. Anchorage is home to one of Alaska's most popular peaks, Flat Top Mountain. But all those hikers have done a lot of damage to the landscape. That's why this fall, volunteers were hard at work rebuilding the final section of the trail. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell did the hike and has the story.
All right, so I'm just 20 minutes into the hike, and so far I've seen two sort of forks in the trail. And the one that forks left is now, looks like it's in rehab. It's covered with what looks like a white linen cloth or carpet that stretches up the side of the mountain.
That carpet you saw, it's called jute mat. It's a cloth that you can lay down.
Joe Hall works for Chugach State Park.
It just kind of reduces the chances of it being eroded. It also kind of makes it look like not a place you want to walk.
Hall calls the impact on the old unorganized trail monstrous.
You know, if you were to go up, you know, put a drone up above here and look at it from the sky, just the amount of, you know, vegetation we've lost is pretty remarkable.
From outer space, it probably looks crazy to have 8 or 10 trails all within spitting distance of each other.
That's Mike Morganson. He's a volunteer with Alaska Trail Stewards, and he says those trails that slice through the land, they're there because of decisions hikers made when the weather was wet and the trail was slippery.
So they're like, oh, I'll just move over here a couple feet to the right where it's grass and I have better traction. And other people do the same, and then pretty soon your 2-foot-wide trail is 4 feet wide. And then the next time it's wet, it becomes 6 feet wide, and then it becomes 8 feet wide. And in some places, it's like 40 feet wide of just eroded, kind of a scar on the mountainside.
So Hall, Morganson, and more than 40 other volunteers, they're here today, wearing hard hats, wielding shovels, picks, and pulaskis.
How did you actually use that thing? I've never used a pulaski before.
You use your back.
Is it hard work?
Yeah.
That's Jasmine Mina.
I like trail work, even though it's hard and it kicks my butt, but I like it.
Mina is a freshman at UAA who volunteers with Alaska Geographic. She says doing volunteer work like this, it's gotten her outside more.
Like, I just hiked this 2 weeks ago.
The backside?
Mm-hmm.
And what was that like?
It was like this, so it was pretty nice. But I forgot that we made a trail, so I didn't use the trail. I used, like, the other trails. But now that it's, like, most of it's covered up, people are going to use this trail now.
And they already are. As Mina and the other volunteers pick away, hikers pass them by. Reth Dewier with Alaska Geographic, he says their work's not going unnoticed.
I kid you not, about every single person here that's been using the trail has thanked us for our hard work. And it's just amazing to be able to see the fruits of your labor and have people thanking you for the work you've put in.
Runners speed by with their dogs. Parents pace along with their kids.
The first time.
Yeah.
High five.
Woo!
Yeah.
It really is one of those perfect fall days. The sky is a bright blue and the tundra a mixture of pale yellows and reds. But with all this traffic, keeping trails in good shape means some good engineering. Volunteer Mike Morganson has worked his way farther up the trail, grading the slope to prevent erosion.
Yeah, so the trail tread, the flat part that you would use, is about 3 feet wide. And then the back slope goes uphill to the current slope. We want that approximately 45 degrees. It's not exact, just for drainage.
So if it rains, Morganson says, that back slope and the slight grade of the wider trail, that'll prevent puddles from forming.
It's pretty amazing to see the progress of coming back like 5-10 switchbacks behind us, and now we're getting all the way up to the pass where it hooks up to a Flat Top and Peak 2 intersection.
And at that intersection where the new trail hooks up to the old one, it's just another 10 to 20 minutes before you reach the summit.
All right, we did it. Gosh, one of the cool things about hiking the back of Flat Top is that the big payoff comes at the very end on the summit, and the entire city of Anchorage, if it's a sunny day like it is today, you get to see it for the first time. And even today, Denali's out, the mountains are out. It's just a stunner of a day. All right, reporting from the summit of Flat Top Mountain in Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Clintonette Gregg of Anchorage. Gregg grew up in Kotzebue and is the leader of the Anchorage Northern Lights Dancers. The Inupiaq dance group opened the first day of the AFN convention yesterday.
I have been Inupiaq dancing since I was about 14 years old. The beauty of it, watching my girlfriend, who's no longer with us anymore, she had passed on, watching her dance and just watching the fluent, graceful movements of the song and the dance, and watching how it enlightened the audience and how it drew them into the dancing. And I felt that that was just a beautiful thing. And the songs are just so beautiful to listen to. I have too many favorites. growing up, I would have to say when I first started out, it would have to be the boat paddling song. Just the tone of the song itself and just how it relates to being out in the water and just being one with the water and being able to do your subsistence with just a small boat and your two hands just amazes me. We also have a seagull dance in Inupiaq. We call the seagull Noyak. And in this song, it depicts the seagull soaring over the ocean looking for fish. And it depicts not only the Inupiaq people going out and subsisting, but it also tells stories of how the animals did the same. So it makes me very proud to know that my teaching is actually being instilled in the youth. And it makes me feel good to know that it's going to be carried on in the future when they're adults. To know where they come from, you know, there's always that question in everyone's mind, who am I? Where do I come from? What is my background? And when you don't have that information and you have to go and search for it, you're spending more time trying to find out who you are than knowing who you are and being able to share that with others.
Clintonette Gregg lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Russell and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes, Elizabeth Harbaugh and Casey Grove in Anchorage, Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The Seward Peninsula Subsistence Regional Advisory Council is meeting in Nome October 24th and 25th at the Mini Convention Center from 9 to 5. To discuss proposals to change federal subsistence wildlife and trapping regulations for the 2018 to 2020 regulatory years and other issues related to subsistence, the public is encouraged to participate either in person or by teleconference. For all information about the meetings, go online to doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. Contact the Office of Subsistence Management to receive meeting documents or to request special accommodation needs by 7 business days prior to the meeting. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.